For a few minutes, let's step back and look at insect conservation and the ESA in a different way. Let's switch lenses, perhaps to a wide-angle lens with a very soft focus. Should our approach to insect conservation be guided strictly by science? What about art and philosophy, even religion? These are cultural connections, and they do make a difference in how the general public views insects. Who should be the primary target of our conservation messages? What are effective ways of communicating this message so the public understands the need for insect conservation and supports activities along those lines? In the scientific literature, restoration projects, and in the development of conservation lists, comparatively more attention has been given to butterflies than to other insect taxa. This is understandable. Butterflies are beautiful, and also they're non-threatening. They're also, their imagery is found in many cultures, symbolizing things like divine inspiration, reincarnation, the transience of life, liberation and sensuality. Butterflies are a prominent figural form in fine art, advertising, fashion, and jewelry. The plight of other insect taxonomic groups might draw attention because they resemble charismatic species, or because they have long been associated with human virtues, such as industry and humility. But what about all those dull gray and brown moths? What about insects and other invertebrates, many of them microscopic, that are critical to the function of specialized ecosystems, such as the one represented here by Sarracenia purpurea? Does much of the public even know that they exist, or that their future is uncertain because their habitat is being destroyed? This illustration by Joel Floyd is a visualization of the scope of insect conservation needs in the United States. The collage spans the U.S. and highlights various habitats where insects are at risk. On the left, is the El Segundo blue butterfly, and in the foreground is Melanoplis spiritus. Below the ground line are threatened habitats such as the endangered burying beetle, and on the left side, cave crickets. In the center, you see echinacea with native bees, native pollinators. And then on the right, you'll see bogs. And on the far right is Cicindela puritana, the Puritan tiger beetle on the Maryland shore. Utter the word insect, and many people immediately think pain and destruction. This is usually followed by a desire to kill. So developing public support for insect conservation beyond butterflies involves overcoming what Michael Samways has called the perception challenge. Being small and quite obscure doesn't help either. In a 2000 Journal of Insect Conservation editorial, T.R. New asked how to conserve the weak inheritors, insects such as socids that, quote, do not bite or otherwise harm people, are small, obscure, and hard to identify, don't sell for large sums of money, and generally manifest features which continue to guarantee them political obscurity. While beauty and powerful imagery are an important part of pull, conservation for the vast majority of insect species will require gaining support for the small and politically obscure. That's why it's important to step back for a few minutes and to consider cultural connections. There we go. Insect Conservation, a 1981 article in the Annual Review of Entomology, based its justification for conservation programs on value. We should conserve insects because they provide three basic benefits to humans. One is intellectual, which Pyle and others defined as inspiration for art and aesthetic considerations and their value to biological programs. Economic considerations, and ecological. These three basic benefits are basically an anthropocentric view, insects are of conservation value because of their benefit to humans. Others offer a different view, such as the interconnected web of life, and contend that all organisms, including insects, have the right to survive. I wish to focus on this latter viewpoint, that insects are part of the interconnected web of life. For this reason alone, their conservation deserves our attention. To further support this approach, I will add ethics to art as justification for conservation. Art and ethics together are the cultural connection. In The Moral Standing of Insects and the Ethics of Extinction, Jeffrey Lockwood developed an ethical basis to justify insect conservation. Do insects, and therefore their conservation, deserve moral consideration? This is not simply what is legal or reducible to religion, economics, or preferences. It's also not a consideration of rights, but it's the process of moral reasoning. Whether insects deserve moral consideration depends upon whether or not there's an ethical basis for this consideration. Lockwood states that one of the most common criteria for establishing an ethical basis is the presence of sentience. And so he defines sentience as the ability to feel pain or experience pain, consciousness, thought and communication with other members of the same species, and awareness of the general world around them. And of course, as entomologists, we know that insects exhibit all these qualities of sentience. And Lockwood concludes that there is an ethical basis for granting insects moral status, and that considering their fate in your lab, in your backyard, in forests and streams, this is separate from their benefit to humans. The moral basis is because insects are sentient creatures, they deserve our consideration for conservation. How often do we make this connection? Michael Samways views an ethical basis as the starting point for an effective insect conservation program. Albert Schweitzer extends it even farther to the concept of the sacred. Our obligation to protect life goes beyond that owed to our fellow humans. It extends to plants and animals that also inhabit our world. Aldo Leopold, in a Sand County Almanac, introduced the concept of the land ethic. He urged humans to rethink their relationship with the earth. Rather than being exploiters of the earth, humans should be the earth's custodians. This quote from the Almanac helps us move from philosophy and ethics to art, making the cultural connection for insect conservation. How can the experiences of beauty or a sense of awe motivate us and many others into action, conservation action? One place that's a great place to start is with the art of Joseph Scheer of Alfred University. He prints exceedingly detailed, high-quality images on specially chosen papers. This particular installation is entitled Moth Book in Three Chapters, and it illustrates 96 moth species from around the world and has 20 channels of sound. This particular installation was displayed last year at the University of Arizona's Museum of Art. This is a stereo sound installation of Western New York moths on goli, which is a Chinese handmade paper, with the speakers inside the paper, and the speakers transmit recorded sounds of these insects flexing their flight muscles and warming up, preparing for flight. Joseph simply calls them sound prints. What began several years ago as an art installation project has expanded into a more serious biodiversity project. Scheer aims to document each species of moth living in one county in western New York State. Scheer states that most people view moths as the wicked stepsister to butterflies. But when these images of Microlepidoptera are blown up to hyperreality, people react in a very positive way. They want to touch them. Scheer has witnessed the same response regardless of the country in which these prints are displayed. In this example, art is transformational. Though first and foremost beautiful and appealing to the eyes and ears, these prints move people beyond sensation. It draws them closer to even touch things before they might have overlooked or feared. The cultural connection has been made. How beauty and ethics combine in a message of conservation is well illustrated in this ad. The beautiful butterfly and flowers draw you in. The connection between butterflies, pollinators, and flowers is made, so their value to the environment. And the message is sealed with a call for protection. Given the ethical basis, we as humans have a moral obligation to protect these conscious, thinking, and aware creatures from doom, particularly as they cannot lobby on their own behalf. Cultural connections can be made through an experience with living insects in a zoo or butterfly house. These encounters can provide a positive first-hand, though highly controlled, experience with live insects, particularly butterflies. Today, there are more than 100 facilities in the U.S. and more than 150 worldwide in where people can experience live butterflies and other kinds of insects. Some establishments have put butterfly gardens at various places. For example, the Florida Aquarium has 4 butterfly gardens, including one on the rooftop. The butterfly rainforest is part of the Florida Museum of Natural History. It flies 55 to 65 species of tropical butterflies. Just outside the rainforest airlocks, the McGuire Center showcases the Wall of Wings, which captures the eye with thousands of preserved butterfly specimens and photographs. Also, as you come out of the airlock, you can see the McGuire Center's many projects on butterfly conservation. Butterflies have been described as living art. People connect with living art by walking through the butterfly house and then emerge to a wall that broadcasts conservation. As Aldo Leopold stated, it begins with beauty and then moves beyond to something more profound. The growth of the butterfly display industry has led to a livestock supply industry in some places in Central America and Asian countries. Costa Rica Entomological Supply was the first commercial butterfly farm in Latin America. It's a network of small rural farmers who captively rear insects for the butterfly house industry. A mural contest was started in the town of the Costa Rica Entomological Supply, and some of these murals have really strong conservation messages. This one, Acto de la Metamorphosis, depicts man's manipulation of the natural environment, and you see here that insects are the puppets. In El Luto de la Naturaleza, the mourning of nature, butterflies live in an ecosystem that is bleeding and disintegrating into infertile soil. Large, colorful, and compelling, these murals are a constant reminder to the townspeople, and especially to tourists, about the need to conserve and protect butterflies and their habitats. A number of authors, including Robert Pyle and Stephen Kellert and Richard Louvre, have written about the extinction of experience, the decline of children's experience with nature. In The Last Child in the Woods, Louvre cites a 2002 British study that showed that children could more readily identify Pokemon characters than they could an otter, a beetle, or an oak. Outreach programs, Mace is getting restless in the corner. So that's where the ESA comes in. As entomologists, we can be the starting point for making a cultural connection with children and their parents. Outreach programs, classes, field trips not only help to recruit the entomologists of tomorrow, they help to form insect conservationists of tomorrow. During these experiences, we can explain to children that there is a moral basis for the ethical treatment of insects. We can highlight their beauty and aesthetic value. We can help cultivate that positive experience with the natural world that will help develop tomorrow's activists for insects and the environment. I would like to close with some words from the president of the ESA in 1936, Edith Patch. She was the first woman president of the ESA. And her public address was entitled without the benefit of insects. And she was very concerned about the rising use of insecticides and their effect on bees and other beneficial insects. And I would like to provide a quote where she said, she in her address, she looked at the year 2000 and what would the world be like in the year 2000. And she said that there would be a proclamation from the President of the United States that land areas at regular intervals would be planted throughout the U.S. and maintained as insect gardens under the direction of government entomologists. And they would be planted with milkweed, hawthorn, and other plants that could sustain populations of butterflies and bees. This is a quote. Entomologists in the future will be more concerned, as much or more concerned with the conservation and preservation of beneficial insect life as they are now with the destruction of injurious insects. She concluded by saying, the fraternity of hive beekeeper will doubtless continue to fight for the life of their pollinators. As for other helpful insects, will defenders of equal zeal rally to their support to the end that mankind may never be without the benefit of insects? Well, Madam President, it may have taken more than 70 years for the ESA as an organization to fully embrace your prophetic words, but here we are, and we are ready to rally with zeal. Thank you.